is a Cincinnati edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. So who's in your family tree? The Library of Cincinnati and Hamilton County can help you find out. Joining me to talk about genealogy are manager of the library's genealogy and local history collection, Patricia Van Skyke, and a member of the Ohio chapter of the Society of Colonial Wars, Lee Cole. He traced his genealogy back to Massachusetts Bay colonist Anne Hutchinson. We'd like to hear from you, too. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So, the library has all sorts of resources on this. If somebody wants to begin looking at their genealogy, where should they start?
Well, they should start with themselves and look back. That's the first place to start. And then you go back generation by generation.
And when does it start to get tricky?
It starts to get tricky. It can start almost automatically to get tricky.
So when you go back one generation and you're in good shape and you certainly know who your parents are in most cases, then you go back another generation, you're probably okay with your grandparents. But how many generations back does it start to get difficult?
Well, whenever you hit that brick wall, and that brick wall can be the first generation or the third generation, there are a couple of things that can happen that can throw you off. One is that you have ancestors that just sort of disappear. You find out who the parents were. And maybe you know where they were from, but you can't find them earlier than that. So they sort of fall off the map. Another thing that can be just as hard is when you have two people with the same name. In fact, Lee and I were talking about that this morning. You can have even a fairly, not unusual name, but find two people, and you have to sort out which one is really your ancestor.
There are more than one Marianne Zalesnik, I have to say, in the Cleveland area. So that I can see that happening.
I've been surprised at the number of people who don't know who their grandparents are.
Really?
Yeah. I was astounded at that because I've known personally my grandparents, but I don't know how many, but a reasonable number of people don't know the answer to that. And, of course, there have been immigrants over the years, and they don't know where they came from or how they got here and the whole history.
Well, where do you go if your brick wall is right there? I mean, when you hit it, you get to your parents, and then you don't – I mean, how do you start to find out?
Well, there are a lot of different ways you can work around. If you can get somebody back to 1940 or earlier, a lot of people start by looking at the U.S. Census. So that's one of the things we recommend. We also recommend, just like you would do any kind of detective work, to look at the particular place. So let's say your family is in Cleveland. Well, we'll start to look for records in Cleveland and see if we can find more information about them.
How expensive is it to do all of this? Is this all available online now, or do you have to pay for searches? How does that work?
Well, it's free, but it does take quite a bit of sweat equity or head equity, if you will. So it's work. But you can do it for free. You can do it. The library has one of the best collections in the whole country of genealogical resources. And then we also have a number of databases that you can come and use at the library for free.
Now, are these databases and information just for people in the Cincinnati area or no matter where you grew up?
No, we cover all 50 states and about 25 foreign countries. So, in fact, that's one of the reasons Lee was able to have so much success is because we did cover the Massachusetts Bay Area, the whole New England area.
513-419-7100 is our phone number if you have a question about genealogy and checking out your ancestors today. You also can email us talk@wvxu.org. We're on Facebook and Twitter as well. Gary has called in from Covington. He says he was adopted at birth. So where does he start to look for his parents? And does he need to go to DNA testing? I mean, where does he need to go?
The DNA testing is not going to do you much good. It might help you eventually, but I've done DNA testing, and I have 700 people who have the same DNA, and I've been able to link with almost nobody because I've been able to follow my family tree in the United States, and there's no way that I can connect them because we really connected back in England, back in antiquity, because you don't really know when the DNA line starts. Now, sometimes it'll help you easily, but it's it's no guarantee.
What about an adoptive situation? Where do you suggest a person who's been adopted start?
Well, there are a couple of things, and one is that it depends whether the records are open and or closed. In most states, Ohio and I believe Kentucky, they're closed at least back to a certain year. So that would be the first thing, is to determine whether those records are available. My guess is that he's got a birth certificate, even though it's an amended birth certificate that will show the adoptive parent's name, but it also will be accurate in terms of the actual date and the hospital. So sometimes people can match that sort of thing up. There also are a number of groups that help people with adoption searches, so that's another way. And often adoptions can be more informal than a formalized adoption. And sometimes there are people in the family that do know. And so that would be actually the first thing that I would recommend. It's the first thing for any genealogical research, is find out what people in your family know, and not just your immediate family, but aunts, uncles, cousins. There's a good bet that someone out there might have a piece of the story that could help him find the answer.
And I'm sorry.
The other last Saturday, I was talking to one of Pat's relatives, Patrick Crippen, who he said, "Oh, I'm adopted," and he had trouble finding his records. And eventually, he was able to have it released, and he found out who his mother was in Chicago, and eventually met her. But they had to go through hoops to succeed.
So those records can be opened at some point?
Yeah, you have to go through a legal process, and it all depends, again, the year and the particular state.
You talked a little bit about Lee, your work has really been in the United States. You've gone back to the colonies. Many people were immigrants and came through Ellis Island. I know I've seen some availabilities of information from the Ellis Island records. But what if you're not in the U.S.? I mean, how difficult is it to go to Europe, to go to Japan, to go to wherever else you might need to go?
Well, I think of Kenny Burke, who heads up the Hamilton County Genealogical Society, and he's German. And I heard a talk just last week from him, and he's gone to Germany, I think, 9 times. He has to find out what town they came from, and then there are lots of records. The Germans were great on record keeping. And so he's been able to trace virtually his entire history by going back to the town.
Now, that could get expensive, too. Is it always a personal visit you think you have to make, or is there a way to do some searching?
You can hire a local genealogist.
Well, there are actually a couple of different ways. And one of the things I want to point out is that a lot of people came in through ports other than Ellis Island and earlier. And we do have access at the library to passenger lists going back to the 1820s. So if they came 1820 or after that, there's a good chance that you can find them on a passenger list, and the passenger list will give you some indication of where they've come from and help narrow down that town, like Lee has said. But one of the things we really encourage people is to first start at the library, because we have a lot of transcribed and abstracted records. We had somebody that was an Irish specialist. She was a professional genealogy, did all kinds of research for people on their Irish ancestors in Ireland. And she used materials almost exclusively in our department. So there's a lot that you can do. And that goes for not just going to Germany or Ireland or Japan, but before going to Massachusetts or Virginia, see what we have there.
Do you have to have a Cincinnati library card to use this information?
No. In fact, people from all over the country come and use our library.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question or a comment about genealogy today, Bob's calling from College Hill. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I have 100 questions. I'll try to limit them. One is that I just accidentally bumped into a website by the University of Minnesota. They have a Center for Immigrant Studies, and they collect a lot of diaries, letters, and papers from immigrants. And I found a wonderful resource just last night, and I'm saying, well, they've got to be in other places than just the University of Minnesota. I'm wondering if you have a list of all the archives that are potentially contactable.
If you go to the library's website, there's a section that's called Research and Homework. And by the way, that's www.cincinnatilibrary.org.
And we should have a link to that on our website as well.
But if you go to a section called Research and Homework, there's then a section called Sites by Subject. And we very frequently load up new sites as we find them that you can link to.
Okay, so by subject is the heading I need to look for.
It's called Sites by Subject, S-I-T-E-S, yeah.
Right, okay, great.
The logical place to go is everybody goes to Amazon. I mean, yeah, yes. Amazon. That's the big kahuna in the, in the industry. And you get you can have free access. It's a pay site, but if you go to the library, you have free access to that. And that's one of the starting points for lots and lots of people.
Yeah, Ancestry.com.
Yeah.
And also Family Search is another good one.
Both.
Yeah.
Do you have a tip for the passenger list? Because I know my family had to come over, and I know about the right dates, and I've only found one passenger list that applies. Well, I'm glad that I got that. But do you have any thoughts about nailing it down better than I've done?
What,
or should I just stop by and visit?
What was the approximate date?
1870 to 1890. I did find the 1890 listing, and that was very informative.
And where did they come from?
They came from the Bohemian Kingdom.
Okay.
And they left out of Hamburg.
Okay. What port did you find them?
I'm sorry?
What port did you find them coming into?
They came into New York.
Okay.
The one that I found, they came into New York. But there, I know, is Baltimore and other places, too.
Yeah, for that time period, even for a couple decades earlier, an awful lot of German immigrants came through the port of New Orleans, too.
Okay.
So that's a place that a lot of people don't think to look at. They got on a steamboat and came upriver.
Okay.
Well, Bob, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. We go now to John in Westchester. Hi, John.
Hi. Incredibly small family, and but one thing I've always sort of been curious about, on my mom's side of the family, we have her mother came out of an orphanage, and I was wondering if, I've always sort of viewed that as like dead end. Is that the case?
I have no experience with orphanages.
It's interesting because an awful lot of people have that experience, and it actually is not a dead end. One thing is that orphanages, particularly in the 19th and early 20th century, are a little different than we think of orphanages today. In fact, people would fall on hard times and they'd put their kids in an orphanage for a couple of years. They were also orphan trained. There are actually how to do it genealogy books that talk about tracing orphan ancestors. So I absolutely would not consider that a brick wall. I think
can the library help John then?
Yeah, sure.
So maybe check it out there, and you can get past that. Lee,
I have a personal experience. I had a great grandfather who came from Ireland, and I knew he came from County Cavan, but I could not find any record of him. So I found that there was a Cavan Historical Society, and I emailed them, and they came back and they said, "Oh yes, we know just about exactly where he came from, and he came with his sister Mary, who married a John North." And I said, "Okay, that's interesting." I went to the library and I found John North, and she came over with her husband and several other members of the family from the same county. And his name was really Pogue, but that wasn't how it was spelled on the list.
So you sort of had to use an interesting way to sort of get around it to find out who somebody might be.
You often have to do some imaginative work and say, oh, that has to be the person.
John, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Our phone number is 513-419-7100. Tom's calling from Union Township. Hi, Tom.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to point out also that, first of all, the Hamilton County Cincinnati Public Library has just a wonderful resource. But also we have a lot of local genealogical societies that have their own libraries. Warren County has an excellent genealogical society. Claremont County has their genealogical library in Batavia branch of the library, Northern Kentucky also. So there's a tremendous amount of resources. If one just Googles genealogical societies in the area that they're interested in, they can also find an extra resource there.
Tom, thanks for that suggestion. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We again are talking about genealogy today. My guests are from the Hamilton County, Cincinnati Hamilton County Public Library, Patricia Van Skyke, and a member of the Ohio Chapter of Society of Colonial Wars, Lee Cole. We go now to Steve in Hamilton. Hi, Steve.
Hi. My name is Stephen Brashear, and I am not the governor of Kentucky.
All righty.
I don't want his job. I don't want his job at all. But I wonder, the language barrier across the generations, I happen to know my ancestors came here in 1632 under a totally different name, and it was translated, you know, through the Cumberland Gap and through North Carolina. And can your guests briefly discuss the difficulties involved in translating language? I know you said earlier the Germans are very good at records keeping. Unfortunately, many of the American colonists were not.
Well, and I know Kenny Burke has, if it was German language, he has all sorts of translation books, an incredible number of books and alternate names and things, and contact him at the Historical Society. That's if German is the alternative. True, the English coming in through, let's say, Boston, they used a form of English which is not native to us. A lot of these and thous and other spellings, but you can usually figure those out.
And one of the things that I want to add is that even if it seems like a fairly ordinary name like Smith, that can be spelled four or five different ways. So one of the things that you want to do is you want to look for that name under every possible way it could be spelled or even pronounced. And one of the things early on that genealogists do, and they finally learn they learn pretty quickly, actually, the difference is they'll say, oh, that can't be my family because my family spelled Smith this way. So you need to really be open to the possibility that names could be spelled and appear very differently on the records.
Steve, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
All right. Thanks so much for your call. We go now to Pat in White Oak. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I'm thinking that maybe the bulk of the European immigrants that came in any kind of trend would have been the Germans, the 48ers, middle of the 19th century, and possibly the Irish around the same time of the famine. But now you get into the question where what was the trend? I mean, everybody's got a story about somebody that climbed over the Cumberland Gap or something, but that didn't happen with the thousands and thousands of people that came from Germany and Ireland to Cincinnati. So I guess the most logical thing to think then is it would be the Port of New Orleans. And then if that's the case, where was the Declaration of Intent signed? I think that's the biggest question.
Patricia?
Well, the Declaration of Intent and for those that are not familiar with that, that's saying that you intend to become a citizen. It's the first step in the citizenship process. That actually can be signed and applied for anywhere, which makes it pretty tricky. So you could live in Cincinnati and you could have a cousin in Indianapolis and you could go to visit them and the two of you could decide, hey, let's go and apply for a citizenship. So there's nothing that says that where you declare that you want to first become a citizen is the same place where you live. The National Archives Regional Branch in Chicago, though, does cover what's called the Great Lakes region, and that includes Ohio. So that would be one place to look and to contact them for declarations of intent to cover a number of states. But where you come in, first enter the country, is not where you would fill out a declaration of intent.
Pat, thanks so much for your call. We have time for one more quick call, and this is Carl in Sharonville. Hi, Carl. What's your question?
Just trying to figure out an easy way to eliminate some of the roadblocks when you're trying to do the genealogy for an African-American family.
Suggestions?
Yeah, we help lots of people at the library with African-American genealogy. One of the biggest roadblocks is once an African-American has an ancestor that was a slave, because then you essentially lose the surname. And what you have to do there, which is really true with all genealogy, but especially there, is do cluster genealogy, which Lee sort of alluded to, and that is searching all the people that are around them. You also need to, if you can find the slave owner's name. If you search that, that can help you go a long way to finding ancestral records for the slave.
Carl, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Want to ask one quick question before we wrap up, and the whole idea of women and how their names change. How complicated does that make the searches?
I haven't found any problem because I'm really dealing with English people, and the names, I mean, yes, they get married, and the women disappear. That's for sure. So you have to find out who they married.
But you can search it down.
But, yeah. If
All right. Well, thank you. We're out of time. There's so much to talk about, but we are out of time. So more questions, go to the library, go to our website, WVXU.org. I've been talking about tracing your family tree. My guest today, manager of the library's genealogy and local history collection, Patricia Van Skyke, and member of the Ohio chapter of the Society of Colonial Wars, Lee Cole. He traced his genealogy back to Massachusetts Bay colonist Anne Hutchinson. Cincinnati Edition is produced by Pete Reitmeyer. Today's technical director was Bruce Ellis. Our engineering staff is Don Danko, Bill Dean, and Mike Makinich. We also had help today from Kevin Reynolds. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.